They told us that our soil has, was washed up, going up to Egypt.
What happens when civil war destroys traditional methods of farming? Where do you go to make money when you are also trying to protect the environment? In one community in Uganda, nature may have an answer. Welcome to Nature Answers, rural stories from a changing planet. We explore stories of how communities in rural sub-Saharan Africa are working with nature to adapt to the climate crisis. I am your host, Martin Mogem. Today we are traveling to a different part of the continent. After visiting Ghana in the first two episodes, we are visiting Uganda in today's episode. Are you excited to travel with me? We are going to a small community successful in restoring wetlands destroyed in the civil war. That community have actually taken on a new challenge, building a sustainable fish farm.
And they told us that the program was as a result of us keeping the environment, keeping the wetland, and we were the happiest because we kept the environment.
That's Betty Akin. For many years, Betty's community has been trying to repair the surrounding environment after decades of conflict. Betty lives in Balualua, a small community located in Adwodwo Parish in northern Uganda. Adwodwo is within the Otuke district. It is home to 21 villages, including the one Betty calls home. And it is that home Betty is trying to return to its former state. So she and her community have found an interesting solution.
They told us about fish farm. We didn't know about the fish farm. We also said, we shall do it. And we embraced it. It was our need. They came and asked us, do you need this? Then we told them, yes, we need.
For the past few years, the Adwodwo community has been home to a fish harvesting project. They hope it will prove a sustainable source of income for future generations. Here, the community has been actively harvesting tilapia and catfish. They use organic compounds and chicken manure as feed. They aim to use the nutrient-rich pond water to expand into the field of aquaculture. Yes, how will they do it? They will use an irrigation system. They will recycle pond water that will be pumped into a nearby nursery bed. The community wants also to grow carrots, eggplants, tomatoes, and cabbages. They really hope to have the nursery up and running very soon. In the past year, Betty has opened her own restaurant. She serves members of the community in a kind of modest setting. Betty uses two small square-shaped huts to cook and prepare the meals. Her guests gather in the open lot in front of her restaurant, where she serves them outside. She cooks and prepares fish from the pond and a local stream. She also cooks other local foods like chicken. Who doesn't like chicken? I do personally. I like it. Betty hopes that she can continue to expand her business for years to come. The first thing on her to-do list is to find a name for the restaurant.
My call is Staff Nyoa Nyoa. Nyoa Nyoa. You just squat and you eat.
As Betty speaks, she gestures to the open space under a few large trees in front of her restaurant. Her guests sit on blankets and wooden benches. She says that she's saving towards upgrades.
Because I don't have enough money to buy the other requirement, I'm just beginning like that.
In the not-too-distant past, this region was ravaged for more than two decades by conflict in the area. The most recent conflict came between the LRA, the Lord's Resistance Army, and the Ugandan military. the LRA committed hundreds of atrocities. This included a massacre of hundreds of civilians in the neighboring Lira district. The conflict also displaced hundreds of people across northern Uganda. Many were forced to flee their homes for safety. They often found themselves in camps with thousands of their fellow citizens. This includes AdWoWo Fish Pond chairman Dennis Obote.
The entire northern Uganda has been in a very big trouble. Me speaking to you, I stopped in P7. Know that I was not even in a position to complete my study.
Daddy says he stopped school in P7, that means primary 7 or grade 7 in Canada, when he was 12 years old, so you can imagine. The conflict was widespread. At one point, there were more than 250 camps hosting roughly 2 million Ugandans in the northern part of the country. That was at the conflict's peak, according to the United Nations.
We were in camp, we were displaced, I cannot even let them because I cannot recall them, the situation we are in.
We were in camps, we were displaced, says Dennis there. The conflict ended in the late 2000s. Many like Dennis were able to return home. But after so many years away, some of them have lost their farming knowledge. In AdWoWo Parish, people began cutting down trees for charcoal. It was necessary to financially support their families.
There was no source of money. We were in this poor environment. The person came here.
They, in this case, means the government.
They were asking the chairperson of the city, which parish has been the worst for charcoal sucking, burning.
As you can notice, English is not Dennis's first language, and you know I'm in the same boat. When you hear sucker, he is actually saying charcoal, and when you hear Perry, he is actually saying parish.
We were being identified, and they knew that they were going to at least to do something wrong to our parish because our parish was the worst in burning charcoal.
Eventually, the local district government in Otuke recognized the destruction in the area. They decided to help AdWoWo Parish to promote environmental sustainability and drought resilience. The community started planting trees as part of a wetland restoration project. You know, for an ecosystem that had been long destroyed through tree cutting and burning, this was very crucial. The wetland restoration project progressed throughout the 2010s. In time, Farm Radio International, that's us, and the International Union for Conservation of Nature, IUCN, introduced themselves to the community. And that was a major change. Farm Radio was instrumental in the village. Working with radio stations, we taught them the importance of maintaining and preserving healthy forests in the area. This education was primarily done using in-person visits and radio programs. The programs were broadcast on the local radio called Voice of Lango.
Farm Radio introduced us to protect the environment, whereby they told us the goodness of planting tree, they told us not to cut tree. If we are cutting tree, we should not cut shea.
When Betty says shea there, she's referring to shea, a type of tree that grows oily nuts used for producing shea butter.
Shea is opportunity given to us by God. So now, even they told us to keep the indigenous trees. Now, in our homes there, in our village, we have kept them. What they told us again, not to burn bush. And now we have stopped burning bush. They told us to keep the bottle you are seeing of soda. They told us to collect it and we put it inside the pit. Then we burn it from there. Farm Radio also told us to use earth. not using these herbicides from the markets there for spraying our crops. They told us that it makes the fertility of the soil to go down. We should use the local things which we are having, like the feces of goat, cow, like our urine also, we can use it for spraying our crop. Farm radio introduced us to a radio. There was a yellow radio.
What they learned on the yellow radio were nature-based solutions. Remember what nature-based solutions are. These are ways of adapting to climate change using the lessons learned from nature. For Adwonwo, as Betty says, these were things like working with trees rather than cutting them down to increase biodiversity. It was also things like using natural pesticides rather than the chemical ones, or using goat and cow feces as fertilizer. But despite the success in rejuvenating the wetland area, the community found itself at a financial loss. The loss of charcoal still left a hole in short-term incomes. So next, the community started to grow rice at the local riverbank. However, the IUCN noticed that this practice was harming the wetlands that the community had worked so hard to restore.
We had a stream where we used to dig rice up to its end, and its end used to grow a very tall rice, and we could heal it very well. But as they came into place, they told us that our soil was washed up, going up to Egypt, where we don't know where Egypt is.
Pulling the rice up by its ends or roots was destabilizing the soil. While the soil may not have made it all the way to Egypt, it was washing down the river. If you follow a watershed map of Adwodwo Parish, the rivers and streams lead into the Nile.
They stopped us from cultivating along the riverbank side. They told us to demarcate.
When Betty says demarcate, she means that the community had begun to restore the sites of the river banks. They used plants to stabilize the banks. This practice ensures that the boundaries of the river will be kept intact. So, the community was no longer burning charcoal and was told not to sell rice. Now what? Interestingly, something had changed. The community and the IUCN had noticed the water start to run clear. Before, it had been yellow. Can you imagine? Water running yellow. Oh, that's a disaster. Then, more happened. The community also began to see the biodiversity in the area improve. Over time, many animals that had long since disappeared began to reemerge.
The ecosystems were there. Frog, fish, each and everything was there. And it came as a result of us.
Hear that, it came as a result of us.
Keeping the environment and keeping the stream very well, that was just a pleasure for them to give us a fish farm because we had kept the environment very good.
In keeping with the organization's plan to support climate-smart livelihoods in the area, the IUCN introduced the concept of a fish farm located in Balwalwa. Thirty members from across the parish were selected to be a part of the project. The number was chosen due to the size of the pond and its goal of generating meaningful income for its members. Furthermore, the members were mainly people who knew how to fish. Betty is one of those 30 members, along with several other women. The IUCN made a point of ensuring women would be meaningfully included in the project. The project began in 2019. The members and the IUCN mapped out where the pond would be located, ultimately deciding to plot the farm on Dennis's property.
They support that the fish pond should be there. I'm the owner of the land, also again. I offer the land. My people think I've sold the land to the organization, and they was about to kill me again.
The community didn't actually plan to kill Dennis. However, they were upset because they thought he had sold his land. A central reason for the hostility was because of how ownership of land traditionally changes hands in rural Uganda. Rather than buying property, land within these small villages is often passed down from generation to generation.
The local leaders came, tell them that this person here has offered the land to bring the development for your people here. It's land freely without any payment. We were brought together in so many discussions. My community agreed. They say you are going to be a member of the project.
Members began to dig the pond in 2021, and according to Betty, a large portion of the digging was done by women.
Women dug the place, yes. They were happy, they embraced the program because they told them that this program, it has come to stay.
The digging took roughly 3 weeks to be completed. Here is what it looks like today. The main pond houses the fish, and there are also two smaller ponds. A small square-shaped pond is attached to an underground spring, storing fresh water that is slowly pumped into the main pond. The outlet pond is slightly bigger and rectangular, and it houses the recycled water from the main pond. All the tools and equipment used to build the pond were provided by the IUCN. This also included the chain link fence and predator net that now guard the pond. At the end of the digging, each of the members was given 4,000 Uganda shillings per day. And over the course of 21 days, this amounted to 84,000 shillings, or let's say roughly 30 Canadian dollars. Yes, it seems small, but it can make a surprisingly large difference in rural communities. By 2022, the pond was finally ready for its first harvest. To help the community, the IUCN paid for the first batch of fingerlings. These are small fish. They also paid for proper feed to sustain the farm. Together with the community, they decided on tilapia and catfish fingerlings. The decision was partially made on what the community wanted, but also the capacity of the pond itself.
The reason as to why we have chosen the tilapia and the catfish, the tilapia here, they are best in need, and it is cheaper. The reason why we have bought the catfish is that the tilapia produce very fast. And if they are producing, they produce about 500. That's why they have bought the catfish, so that the catfish will eat some, so that it doesn't overcrowd the dam.
The tilapia in the pond breed fast. They are also in demand and cheap. But too many tilapia can get out of hand very quickly. Meanwhile, catfish keep the tilapia population reasonable. They eat a few of the smaller fish. It follows how the fish interact in nature. The IUCN also paid for a fishery consultant. This person will teach the community about the importance of fish harvesting and how to maintain the farm. The consultant also advised them to use chicken manure and organic compounds to feed the fish. The manure is rich in nutrients and minerals. This cycle is another nature-based solution in action. Let me describe how. Chicken manure feeds the tilapia. Tilapia feeds the catfish. The water full of nutrients water the vegetables, and the vegetable waste feeds the chickens. It mimics how ecosystems work. However, The project experienced a setback after a severe drought hit the region. The lack of rain and high heat hurt the growth of the tilapia fingerlings that had already been placed in the pond. When the harvest was finally ready to be sold, the drought proved to be the least of the community's worries. The tilapia made up most of the harvest, as the catfish didn't come anywhere close to their expected results.
That money was got from tilapia because the catfish went, we did not find it. We just sold 70 of them out of 1,000. We didn't know what went wrong.
Turns out if you are too successful at bringing nature back, nature comes back.
Right now even we are scared because there are some animals like they are there inside the water, even the snake. Even there are times when people enter up to inside. You never know, people have different heart. Others people can go and they hook the fish.
The community's success in restoring the wetlands brought the fish pond to the region. With the restoration also came a return of former predators like snakes. The community put up security measures like guard, predator nets, and fences. But some predatory animals snuck in to snack on the fish. Despite their meager success, each member received 150,000 Ugandan shillings, around 50 Canadian dollars from the first harvest. For Betty, this money will be life-changing. It will allow her to improve the living conditions of herself and her family.
My life has changed. Because I ate fish, I was not as you are seeing me. They gave us money. Of course, if they give you money, you come and you tell your husband that I've gotten this money from the group there. We share the same idea and we were happy. Children were able to go to school. Sickness also, we used that money and helped us also for food. It has changed our life. And like me, I started with that small restaurant stuff. I cook there some chicken, people come and buy. It has changed also my life.
However, the yield wasn't quite enough. As a result of the loss of fish, the community only made 8 million shillings, or roughly $3,000. The original estimate was that the farm would generate 30 million shillings, more than three times as much. Still, the members sold their first yield to neighboring communities and districts. Denny says otters in the districts of Agago bought large amounts of fish for their restaurants from the pond. But the community lacked exposure and access to local markets. He says that many don't have a way to travel to the market, and this forces the community to wait for buyers to come to them, or they must use middlemen. And you know, in business, middlemen are notorious for not paying full price. Still, Betty says the fish harvest vastly improved gender equality and female representation in the area. People were already working in the area to improve gender equality. Yes, it's true. Betty says that men and women had already learned to work together in the field. The harvest was still a milestone achievement for Betty and other women in the project. By the time of sale, the women had a platform. They were the leading voices on the farm and in their community. Can women say yes?
Their life changed because other people, other women, they could fear speaking when people are crowded like this. By the time of selling their fish, they were free. And you could get someone just coming with the fish, selling it even here freely. They got that chance of having freedom of speech, even what is taking place there. They could also argue with men like that.
For the second harvest, the IUCN encouraged the community to use the profit from the first harvest to invest in the farm. The members have struggled to balance their needs with saving the money necessary for the pond. Last year, they could not gather all the necessary funds for the second harvest. The local district government promised to supplement the fish and feed, but they have yet to keep their promise. This year, the community only purchased 500 tilapia and 300 catfish fingerlings.
The district told us that they are going to give us fish. They failed us. So we had to use this small money we had. So we have brought the fingerlings there, plus the feeds. But they are not enough. We just brought it little because we don't want the project to fail us.
Despite the smaller scale of the second harvest, Betty says that the pond is still a strong point of education for the youth in the community.
Like me, if I have a son, if today I'm not going for work in the fish farm, I make him to go and work. They work together, they share work. And right now, you can even hire them to go and work into someone's fish farm.
The children learn how to maintain the pond and properly feed the fish. It gives them the skills needed to work on other farms in the future. Betty has four children, who she says help her feed and fill in for her when she cannot make it to the pond. Throughout this second harvest, the 30 members are continuing to realize the importance of the pond to the local community. And Betty really hopes people will realize how vital it is to invest in the pond. Her expectation is that in the future, the community can expand the farm, and this will be ideal given the demand for fish from neighboring communities.
The local community who are not members of the project are even demanding where we have stocked the fish already, because they knew they can bring something to them in future.
Betty also hopes that the members and the community can learn from the mistakes of the past. She wants to start with the nursery bed. And she says that in the past, some community members refused to learn about the irrigation system.
Whenever the engineer called them to go, they don't want to go. Now after these people, they have completed with their work, we didn't know anything. That was our own problem.
Now she says the community is keen to get the system up and running. This would allow them to use the nutrient-rich pond water to grow vegetables in the dry season. The community has already built an extensive nursery bed, complete with wire fencing. The crops will provide another source of revenue for the community, and Betty hopes she'll be able to use some at her restaurant. As the restaurant continues into its second year, business only continues to get better.
I enjoy because it gives me something little to sustain life.
The local district government has told the community that they will supply the seed for the crops once the nursery bed is complete. Despite the setbacks, Betty says that she still maintains hope in the future of the farm.
You know something, which you have worked by yourself, you will feel it. You say that maybe, let me see whether this money that I've injected, whether I will get some profit. If I get a profit, it will be a pressure to me. I will embrace the project. But if I don't get a profit for two times, you lose that card. So we still have that hope.
We still have that hope. As the second harvest continues to grow, the community members hope to capitalize on the experience they gained from the first season. For Betty, the success of our restaurant is a top priority. While it may not yet have a name, it stands today as a symbol of hope and resilience in a community that is far from lacking these attributes. This is Nature Answers, a podcast produced by Farm Radio International. You can learn more about nature-based solutions and the people doing them by listening to Nature Answers wherever you get your podcasts. Today's story was about a parish in Uganda, and we hope you enjoyed visiting with us. Follow us on social media at Farm Radio or visit us at farmradio.org/natureanswers. There you'll find transcripts, pictures of the people you heard today, and also more information about nature-based solutions. I am your host, Martin Mogem, coming to you from Yaoundé, Cameroon. I can't wait to be back in 2 weeks with more stories. See you then.
This episode is written and produced in Uganda by me, Liam Baker, with help from staff from Farm Radio International's office in Kampala, Uganda, who made me feel welcome and shared priceless knowledge. Sounds were recorded on location by Alex Dines and myself, with further assistance provided by Stephen Achat, Farm Radio's country manager in Uganda. Alex and I joined as part of an internship program at Carleton University's School of Journalism. This episode was edited by Teres Brickerhoff. Farm Radio compensated community members who participated in interviews. It is common practice to compensate a person in this region for the time they spend being interviewed. Our podcast would exclude many important perspectives if we only interviewed those who could afford to step away from the economic activities without compensation. Nature Answers was produced thanks to funding from the Government of Canada.